Well, welcome back to Student Ministry for Parents. I am John Spencer.
And I'm Susan Needler.
We are in the middle of a new series, and we will be talking about the book Age of Opportunity with Paul David Tripp today. We don't have him in office because we have zero budget, and we are working in a youth house room.
That is so cold.
It is freezing in here this morning, and I think it's like 60 degrees in this house.
And probably like 75 outside.
Yeah. somebody turned off the heat. Again, we have zero budget, so we can't even afford heat, which is not true. There is heat.
Do you know Paul Tripp?
Do I?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, okay. I was like, could we have him?
That would be so cool.
That would be so cool.
No, we just...
Not today.
Not today. Yeah. He was busy. I'm sure. I'm sure he's super busy. But we read his book, and we're going to talk about it today. But first, we always like to share a memory, a moment in youth ministry just to catalog our years. And I was thinking about this since our last recording. And I really wanted to give like a later memory, but then something happened last week.
I can't wait.
Where we have this event called Hawks and Hornets, Susan's favorite event. And it's kind of like a serious moment and a rite of passage moment for our eighth grade students. And it's kind of an awkward, you know, topic. We talk about, you know, it's Hawks and Hornets. It's like the next level up of Birds and Bees. So to kind of ease into the night, we kind of just do some like fun stuff. We have like food, and we only had boys this year. So it was like food. And then we just played some video games, and we're playing Super Smash Bros. And the boys are just really into it. Like they're just digging it. And we have like this mini tournament going on, and a student has a control in his hand. He's like, I'm going to win. I'm so going to win. And the dog, we were at somebody's house. This dog hops up onto their lap and he's got mouth wide open, just playing the game. Like, I'm going to win.
I'm sick. I'm scared.
Sorry. This is so gross. The dog just starts licking inside of his mouth.
Sick, John.
But the best part is, he didn't stop the dog.
That is disgusting.
It just kept licking inside of his mouth.
No, that's
and he did good. Not want to turn off the game or lose the game. So he just kept playing. But what disturbed me the most is he
terrifying.
Could simply just closed his mouth, and he didn't.
Did he comment on the dog?
He did afterwards. He's like, oh my gosh, that dog just French kissed me for like a solid
gross,
30 seconds.
John.
It was so gross, gosh, and so disgusting. Funny and such a great image of the students we work with,
oh
right? Yeah, we all have those phases where we're so engrossed in what we're doing, yeah, that not even a dog licking us in the mouth will disturb us from what we're focused on.
Did he win? I just need to
He
know.
Did not. No,
that
not,
wasn't
not,
even worth it.
Not even
oh
close.
Gosh.
Not even close. Yeah. So I just like those little moments that I just like put in my brain. I'm like, wow, that is why I love my
Can't
job.
Can't unsee that.
Yeah.
I just
lost
out of your
it.
Memory.
Like nobody was paying attention to it either. It was just me and one other leader who weren't playing because there weren't enough controllers. And so everybody was focused on the game, and we're just dying laughing over this moment. We're like, dude, just close your mouth. Just close your mouth.
I'm so sorry.
I love it so much. Yeah. There's these big moments that just, you know, are heartwarming. And then there are these moments that just make you laugh and just realize, wow, that was me at some point. I was definitely that into something that this was not going to stop me from pursuing, you know, whatever feat I'm trying to accomplish.
All I can think is I'm so glad I work with girls.
That's never happened
That's
to girls.
Lesson
no,
I'm learning.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
No, no. Are any gross stories with girls that you would be willing to share?
The only thing I can think of is the couches in the youth basement. Gross. One of my girls out so bad she won't even sit on them. She puts a crazy creek on the couch.
Like currently, like the
yes,
current couches.
Yes.
They used to be way grosser.
Yes. Just because we don't do gross.
Yeah.
Not like that.
No. I mean, I've seen some gross moments with like some girl students as well, but I dare not approach them about it. That's not my job.
Yeah,
I will approach the guy students. Like that was disgusting. Please don't do that.
So sorry.
Yeah. Oh, man. That's another one for the books. For sure.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, again, I say we. I have read
The
Age of Opportunity.
Can't wait to hear about it.
And Paul David Tripp, he is a counselor by trade and works very much so with teenagers and families and people with younger children, but he wrote this book about a biblical guide to parenting teens.
And he's been doing this forever.
Yes.
Like, yeah. He is so well respected. And if you haven't heard of him, he really does have a wealth of things to look into.
Yeah.
He's someone I actually have read a few chapters of some of his books.
Yeah. You don't need to read much to realize he's got some valuable information.
Yeah. And he has, wouldn't you say he has a decent presence, like maybe not online per se, but like you can find great YouTube clips of his talks. Like, he's a really
He's got a great mustache.
He has a massive mustache.
Yeah. So he's got a great presence online, both with social media and YouTube page. Is it a page in YouTube?
Channel.
Yes. Thank you. That's what I was looking for. Yeah. There are pages, but yeah, he's got a great YouTube channel, and he has just a wealth of knowledge. Anything you can find from him, he's worthwhile looking into.
I always appreciate him because I feel like he has good sound bites that are they're just so meaty.
Yeah.
And then you can take them with you. Like, he just understands parenting. He understands kids.
Yeah.
He's a parent himself, which is always so helpful. Yeah. So I'm excited to hear about this book because I do love him.
What I do appreciate, the level of sarcasm in this book is, it's hard to, like, I'm a sarcastic person. So for me, picking up sarcasm is a little bit easier, but you can tell in the wording of things, he's being very sarcastic about who teenagers are and are not, and who parents are and are not with their teenagers. And so I just really appreciate his lightheartedness about approaching this, that it's not like doom or gloom. It's like, yeah, this is hard and you're going to struggle and your teenager's going to struggle, and let's talk about it. Mm-hmm. So he, like you said, he has all these sound bites, and that's, at least in this book, it seems like it's a lot of those compiled together, where some of the books that we've talked about, or a lot of books, they'll kind of give this linear line of communication where, like, we're building up to our thesis statement. He just seems to be, like, from chapter to chapter, just be like, all right, let's talk about this. All right, let's talk about this. Let's talk about this. So it's really hard to summarize everything that I read. But I totally recommend the book, that there are a lot of good nuggets to pull from it. And there's no way I could talk about every single one of them or even really deeply focus on a collective group of chapters. But so I'm going to, you know, pick out some of my favorite things that I heard him say, and just, let's just talk about those. So to summarize a little bit of, like, kind of the opening chapter, where he's introducing this idea of this, it's entitled Age of Opportunity, that the teenage years are really this time of life where everything should, if you're viewing the world and your life as optimistic, that the teenage years are really a time of opportunity rather than just insecurities and things to be scared of or being pessimistic. That they're living at a crossroads for the first time in their life where they have to make decisions all the time to follow what mom or dad say, to follow what my friends say, to follow what God says, to follow what I say. Every single moment is an opportunity to make a decision that is going to lead to a more flourishing life. So the opportunity there is to, as parents or youth workers, we have an opportunity to guide these teenagers towards faithfully following Jesus at every crossroads in their life, both big and small. Now, part of what is hard about being in the age of opportunity is that it's overwhelming, that the world of a teenager is vast. There is just this massive landscape where, for the first time in your life, you're starting to see how big the world really is. And it's so much more than your childhood experience, where everything was at home and, like, around your family and wherever you were at school. But then everything, you're starting to make decisions that are going to affect your entire future. And so you start to get overwhelmed. And that's what causes insecurity. That's what causes anxiety and stress, is that you have this fear you're going to make the wrong choice. And if you make the wrong choice or do the wrong thing, you thus have failed at life at the age of 15.
Right.
Which is so much the minority of your life. But part of the importance of this stage of life is that a lot of the habits that you form in your teenage years during your age of opportunity are the habits you're going to keep for a lot of your adult life, or it's going to be harder to change in your adult life. So yeah, there is a bit of determination and severity that needs to be taken when you're making decisions. And that's why it's really good not to be passive in the teenager's life and making them and helping them make decisions. You don't need to make the decisions for them, but you need to present to them the best opportunity, the best choice, and be compelling with that. But at the end of the day, giving the space for the teenager to make their own decision, because they're arriving at adulthood and becoming their own individual selves. Think about that.
I was just thinking about how, like, maybe I should have come to this conclusion before you said it, but when you were explaining the title, I was thinking it's so funny how when you think differently about something, like if you take, for this instance, we're talking about teenage years, and you put on its head what you would normally think about those years, how positive thinking, like, even just changes how you might perceive the time. And I was like, it is really different to think of teenagers as this opportunity instead of like, we just got to muscle through it. Because, and I'm sure you get this all the time too, when I tell people what I do, they're always like, oh, better you than me. And like, they're like, oh, I don't know how you do it. Teenagers are the worst. I'm like, oh my gosh, I love teenagers.
Yeah.
And so it is funny to think there is just this stigma that goes with like middle school to high school of like a stereotypical burned out parent pulling their hair out. You know, it's like, oh, I don't know what to do with them. And it's like, no, like we can take a few steps back and think, oh my gosh, like this is actually this awesome opportunity to help set you up really well, or to learn together through all the disasters we're about to go through. You know, I'm like, I just like kind of flipping things on their head to look at it differently, because especially if you have a preconceived notion, if you don't have teenagers yet, or if you're in the middle of like middle school and high school of like, I don't know how this could get worse. This is bad. Of like, wow, this really is an opportunity. That just changes it for me. Even just thinking like, yeah, like the bumps in the road don't have to be this place that are taking me under. It's like, this is a cool teaching moment, or like letting them struggle. Like, I don't know. I'm eager to hear what you learned too.
Yeah. He talks about the hard part for parents or anybody engaging with teenagers, the reason why they can be intimidating or like just a moment to like get through is because they're so spontaneous in their thought process. Well, from our perspective, it feels spontaneous, where they will all of a sudden emote something that you just did not see coming, or they will just say something. You're like, wow, that sounded like it was out of left field. But internally, they've been processing it for like a year. Right. And it's just not until like some moment later on where they finally verbalize it. And part of the hard part is we love routine and we love predictability. Mm-hmm. And what's hard for a lot of people is teenagers are so spontaneous in their decision-making and their vocalizations. Mm-hmm. And so it feels scary because you feel like you don't have control over them. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, he gets into this is our job is not to control our teenagers. And that's where we get frustrated and we shut down when we realize, oh, I have no control over this being. And so I disengage from them. What the first step to that is realizing they're spontaneous beings, and that's who's in your room. And sometimes they're going to be spontaneous in a scary way, and sometimes they're going to be spontaneous in a very awesome and loving way. One thing I love about working with teenagers is that they're spontaneous in ways, you know, like the student who's playing the video game. We're like, I was never expecting that, where it's just really funny. But one of the ways that I love being in long-term youth ministry is seeing students being spontaneous with how brilliant they are. Mm. Like, they will say something both witty, but also highly intelligent and thinking about something in a way that no adult ever would.
Right.
And part of it is they don't have, they're not overthinking it in some ways, where they're just spouting it out and you're like, wow, that was actually really intelligent.
Yeah, they're not trying to.
Like, I would never have gotten there without you vocalizing that. And I just really, appreciate that. And we can say those things because we are with teenagers longer, over a longer span of time than a parent is. Like, the parent is riding that teenage wave and then they're out of it. But we've been in youth ministry long enough where we've ridden a couple of waves. And so we see these tendencies like, oh, this is just teenage culture. Like, this is how they communicate. This is just who they are. And when you kind of ride that wave more than once, and, you know, a parent who has multiple kids who are spread out, they'll get to ride that wave several times as well. And it's different with your own kids. But you'll start to pick up on those things as long as you don't disengage. And it's like, oh, this is really fun. Me and Susan, we live kind of chaotically in the sense of like, we love the chaos of like not knowing, like, wow, I did not see you coming around the corner. That was so fun. Well, yeah, you don't like jump scares.
John loves to scare me.
Yeah. 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 But yeah, it's something that can be really exciting.
Yeah.
That you don't, there's not a script and there's not a, where if I have this in front of me and I say these things, then the student is going to get this and they're going to live a faithful life. It's like, no, you just kind of have to be ready whenever.
Ever evolving, ever changing.
Whenever they're ready and you can't control it. And that's where he gets a lot about it, into our idolatry of it's hard to parent, but in particular, it's hard to parent teenagers because of our own idols. It's got nothing to do with them. It's got so much to do with
that
us.
That is so interesting because that has to be core for all of parenting. Mm-hmm. I feel like you get your first taste of that with toddlers, of just like this thing you literally can't control.
Yeah, yeah.
They're so out of control.
Yeah.
And actually, now that I'm saying that, I feel like we did like a team meeting one time and we were like, charting out all of our ministries because John is now over all of our next generation stuff. And I remember going through like each age of like nursery, preschool, blah, blah, blah. And then when we came back to middle school, it was kind of like,
yeah,
they're kind of like a toddler. Yeah. Not really, but like for the purpose of this conversation of like, they are getting into this place where it's like, gosh, this feels out of control.
Yeah.
And it, as a parent, I feel like that is probably our constant battle, is battling our own idolatry in these people that we love fiercely, but they also have a great propensity to embarrass us or infuriate us or, you know, like, but that's more about me than my kid.
So, yeah. He talks, the word that he gives is that our expectations reveal our idols. And so what expectations reveal our idols. So whatever expectations you put on your teen and they don't fulfill them.
Woof. I do not like
What does that expose about yourself? Not about your teen. What does that expose about yourself? Mm. So think about the expectations you have of your own children, Susan. And when they don't meet your expectations, how do you respond?
Anger.
Yeah. Why?
Because they didn't do what I wanted them to do.
Yeah. Yeah. So he keeps getting back to the question of what is our role? Is our job to put our own vision and expectations onto teenagers, or is it for us to help them grow in reliance on the Lord? Mm-hmm. And what that, by doing that, you are letting go of, you know, leading this, being the sole savior and leader of this person to be faithful to Jesus. And so he uses this phrase that our job as parents is to train and love and lead our kids to grow from being dependent on mom and dad, to train and lead and equip them to be dependent on God. Because we are raising, essentially, we're raising adults. They're going from childhood, adolescence to adulthood. We're leading them a life to become independent. But he kind of pushes back and says, we're not ever trying to get them to become totally independent beings. We're getting them to go from being reliant on mom and dad for survival to being reliant on God and understanding that all of reliance and all of life is dependent on our faithfulness to God and his salvation that he puts on us, that we can't live a healthy life without Jesus. And so what we should be doing is training them to be reliant on God.
You don't have to go into this if this is like a huge detour, but I'm just wondering, as you know, not knowing who all is listening, but does he speak to, if that, let's say that is your biggest expectation of like, I want my children to walk with the Lord, mm-hmm. and like the fruit of that. And what if you have like a rebellious teenager in the sense of like faith and they're mm-hmm. just not interested? Does he speak to that, or is this more? Yeah.
Yeah, he does. He gets into the reality that you can do everything right. You can have the right expectations. You can have the hope, your hope in the Lord. But at the end of the day, you can't expect your child to behave and live a life that you lived to get to your faith in Jesus. Mm. All you can do is express the wisdom that you have gleaned from somebody else onto them and help them in every moment of opportunity, every crossroad, to say, hey, this is the Lord's wisdom on this decision. Or this is how the Lord calls us to respond to this situation. And that's all you can do. And that's so hard, right? Because you just want to keep holding their hand and just like, just come with me. Trust me. But they're becoming themselves. They're becoming who they are outside of you. And that's really hard to do at the right time. And so part of what's hard about the adolescent stage is the moment we experience that the first time, it creates this tension between the parent and the child to the point to where there's a wall put up between you two. And that's usually so early on in the teenage years that the wall just gets thicker and thicker because there isn't repentance. Mm-hmm. There isn't ongoing forgiveness. And he actually gives like three things how we should engage in those moments when there is tension and there's hardship. And he says, help the teen understand when you're confronting them on something they disagree with you, is he says, clarify your actions. So help them understand you're not coming from a place of, I want to win this argument, mm-hmm. but why it's important for them to understand where you're coming from. And then help your teenager to examine his or her own defensiveness. So one, exposing your love, but then understanding, hey, I'm also noticing like this is a pattern of language that you're using that is not healthy. This is not a healthy way to look out on life. And then last, and this is the kicker where a lot of people stop, is be faithful in confessing your sins against your teenager. By doing that, you're setting an example and you are setting up a pattern that says you're not asking them, hey, you need to confess your sins to me. You've done all the wrong, I haven't, but you're saying, hey, I'm seeing this unhealthy pattern, but I also realize I've said some things that aren't good. I've said some things that have hurt you and I want to apologize. Mm. What you're doing is you're creating that routine and habit for them that they may not get it yet, but you're at least expressing onto them what God has called you to do. And then after that, it's up to the teenager to respond. And it may take years to get there. Some might get it right away, but most won't. And that's really hard to do.
This feels like such, we could write a sequel because it's like the age of opportunity for your kids. But I'm like, as a parent, the opportunity to really grow, I mean, this is going to be such a step of faith of like,
yeah,
I am out of control,
mm-hmm.
and I need Jesus to raise this.
Yeah.
Because for so long, I feel like we can fall into the trap that we're raising our kids.
Yeah.
Because for so long, you are boots on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is just this natural, good, God-given change of like, we're growing up. And that's a good thing. And like, really an opportunity to say, all right, I got to step back. And as I'm leading you, God's leading me to really let go and trust even just things like your own interest in your faith.
Yeah.
Like I cannot
force
you to love reading your Bible or going to church or God.
Yeah.
I'm like, I need a sequel on how to do that.
Yeah.
Because that's hard.
Yeah. And he does talk a lot about how we believe that as parents, we've kind of arrived and we need to get our kids to be like us. We're like, you need all the work. You need to get to where I'm at and then things will be good. Yeah. Which is not true. The Lord uses our children and our teenagers to shape us just as much as we are meant to shape them. And so it's important to stay engaged in that relationship because it's a mutual experience and a mutual growing point. And it's not so much like, I have all this wisdom if this teenager just listens to me. But you'll realize the more you spend time with your teenager, how much wisdom you're going to gain by spending time with them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. And that is both humbling, but also really exciting. And that's that piece of opportunity that he's talking about is that it's you might be saying something to your teenager that you need to be saying to yourself. Mm-hmm. If you take the time to realize like, oh, I need to hear that as well.
Yeah. I know. I always feel like some of my greatest things that I say in a small group is because I'm literally just very convicted. Seems like y'all need to hear this. Yeah. But I'm like, I understand this because I feel this.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Deeply.
Absolutely.
Very exposing.
So I'll wrap up with this analogy that it gives is he talks about the teenage years are a moat building stage where it can be really isolating in that time. And part of that is it's just developmentally what we do is we tend to we're trying to figure ourselves out. And so we need to close the door. Literally, we need to close our door and, you know, just sit within ourselves and think through everything because I'm processing so much. And that's why the doors closed to our bedrooms in our teenage years. He's like, I'm just processing everything that I just saw today. And how I'm experiencing the world. It's full of both great hope of like, oh my gosh, what if this boy likes me? You know, it's like, or it can be filled with great insecurity. Like, I cannot believe I sneezed in front of her. You know, I wonder what my face looked like when I sneezed. Was it, am I an ugly sneezer? I don't know. I'm going to practice sneezing in the mirror. Yeah, you know what, I'm not lying. You know it's true. There are, yes, yeah. Those are the things that
I used to pretend to cry in the mirror. So
yes.
I see what that looked like. So
thank
I do
you.
Know.
Okay, exactly. Am I an ugly crier? I'm an ugly crier.
Put on Celine Dion, fake cry.
Yes.
Go.
Yes, absolutely. And so it's when that door is closed, where our communication between the teenager all of a sudden gets shut off, is they are building this moat around them. And that moat is they're saying everything in my kingdom is safe. Everything outside of my kingdom is unknown and thus unsafe. But part of our job as youth workers and what he's talking specifically about parents is even though there is a moat around our teenager, don't forget to build bridges because you don't want to leave them so isolated that they can't come back, but they don't leave them so isolated that you can never go in. And so our job is, even though they are projecting an image of isolation, our job is, I know you want that, but I'm going to continue to pursue you. And they may not be able to vocalize that, but that's what they need and that's what they want. Mm-hmm. They want to see who is going to still try and come and pursue me. And then, you know, it's like you're coming into their kingdom. And if long enough bridge working is done, then the bridges will stay up and then people just come and go as they please. So what tends to happen is parents will not pursue. They're like, that is so hard. They don't want me. So thus I'm going to give them the space that they need. And sometimes that's okay. And sometimes that's good. But most of the time you need to be, you know, building those bridges and continuing to pursue your teenager, despite the fact that they're on this island that they made for themselves. And so it's, yeah, I don't know what that may look like for each individual household, but Susan, how do we build bridges in youth ministry?
Oh man. I mean, I feel like some of that depends on who it is, but I always feel like there are something you said earlier. I was thinking just side by side things in something they're interested in, whether that's like ice cream, going for a walk, like something, it feels kind of like a low stakes instead of like, we need to talk. You know, I'm like, anything side by side feels like such a bridge in the sense of it gives them an opportunity for something they like. And there's not the pressure of like, I've realized it is just hard to face come at something when someone's not ready.
Yeah.
A teenager. Like there is just, you might as well save your time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because if they're not ready to talk about it, and that's just really vulnerable. So I've found, I mean, girls and guys are so different. I would love to hear you answer the question too, but I'm like, I've had some of my best conversations just on walks where we're not looking at each other. We're doing something they like and we're just talking and stuff comes out. So I would say side by side, low stakes opportunities have been really sweet bridge building things. And I mean, checking in, again, as a non-parent to these kids, just a check-in I've realized means so much. Yeah. And like you said, keeping that bridge open, whether you get a response or not, sometimes you do, sometimes you don't, sometimes you get one every time.
Mm-hmm.
And it just keeps that door open to be a reminder of like, I'm still here. Like I still care about you.
Yeah.
That's been it for me with girls, but what would you say for guys?
It's a similar experience. I've learned to become interested in what they're interested in. Mm-hmm. And that's why I get injured a lot in youth ministry is a lot of, at least now, like a lot of my boys are into like football and I love football. Football's fun, but I'm also older and I can throw my arm out a lot easier. Oh. I can like injure my knee. Yeah. Like, but it's like, they want to play football. And so I want to play with them. And so I'm going to become interested. I would much rather sit around a table and just talk and like hang out, but they don't want to do that.
No.
And that's okay. It's like, if playing football is going to build that first bridge, because my guys are pretty young, like we'll play football and we'll have a good time. And then at some points, like I'm going to disengage because my body can't handle it.
Because I'm going to die.
Yeah, absolutely. But really becoming interested in what they're interested in and then allowing the teenager to be the expert in that thing for you. Hey, I've been, you know, I had a D group. Susan remembers this D group. They were super into anime at some point.
Yes, they were.
Yeah. And I have,
John's a huge anime guy.
I have no idea on anything in anime.
And maybe no interest.
And
before
I had zero interest before. I have no interest now, but at least I have some understanding of why somebody would be interested in anime. And so what I did is I was like, hey, pick out the best anime movie.
You're so nice.
And we'll watch it together. And they geeked out with me. And it was like, this is why this movie's awesome. I'm like, great. That's so cool. Thank you for showing that to me. There was some mildly interesting parts in that. That's awesome. And it just became this bonding moment where I'm like, and eventually they grew out of anime. Like it was,
thank goodness.
They were so into it. And then all of a sudden they were so not into it. And that's why I don't invest my time to be like, well, I better become super anime centric. It's like, no, I'm riding this wave with them. Yeah. I'll build this bridge this way. And then when they become interested in something else, what's really funny is one of those students who was really into anime is now really interested into the things that I'm really interested in. And now they're in college. And so now we have like mutual interest of stuff. And so it's like, wow, like, I don't know if he would have ever gotten there or I would have ever gotten there if we didn't build that first bridge together. So it's a long game. Because some of the bridges, they're just not going to work, but you got to keep building them as much as you can. Mm-hmm. And I'd say that's true for our job and for parenting.
Yeah.
And parenting bridges, it's tougher because you're in the home and there's a little bit more sensitivity that comes with those things. Mm-hmm. And that close quarters will create higher tension. Mm-hmm. And so what we also say for our job is part of our job as youth workers is to be a bridge. We actively are bridges for the parents. And so that's where we would kind of say, hey, use us and whatever we can do to help your teen and yourself grow in your relationship so that you can propel them closer to Jesus. Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. It's a great book.
It sounds amazing.
Yeah, there's a lot there. There's a lot I didn't talk about. Those were just like highlights of like three chapters. And this is, I don't know, 10, 12 chapters.
Decently long book.
Yeah, it's pretty long. It's your average size book. How wide do you think that is?
I have no idea.
Next episode, we're going to look at the life we're looking for. Reclaiming Relationships in a technological World with Andy Crouch.
That sounds really good.
Yeah. So the importance of... Actually, I don't fully know. I haven't read it yet. So I'm going to read it this month, and then we're going to talk about it next month.
Awesome.
Yeah, it sounded good. Andy Crouch is also a clear communicator.
Has he written other things?
What else has... He writes a lot on technology, but he's a pastor in Atlanta.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I could totally be making that up. He has glasses. Yeah.
Does he have a cool mustache?
He does not have a
monocle,
cool mustache.
Anything.
He's the author of 4 books.
Wow.
It doesn't say what books, but he's the author.
Whoops.
I'm also the author of 4 books. They're not published, and nobody else has seen them.
No one's ever going to read them.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Well, it's been a fun conversation, and we look forward. Let us know if you have any questions, thoughts. If you ever want to come on the podcast,
please let us know.
We have been getting more and more inquiries about, we just love it. Keep sending them. And maybe one day somebody who sends us an email says, hey, can you review my book? It might be your book.
It might be mine.
It might be Susan's. We will definitely review Susan's book if she writes one. But
oh my gosh.
It's been a fun conversation. We will see you guys next time.
Can't wait.
Tell you, this is awesome. In your ear, because it's your day.